Hello and welcome back to the Stadio Podcast. I'm Mr. Kwanga.
I'm Ryan Hun.
Ryan, how are you doing?
I'm all right, thanks, man. I've really enjoyed these Champions League, so I think I'm a bit kind of, you know, I've probably drunk too many goals. Good goals as well, so I'm a bit kind of like, ooh. And nothing's over, none of the ties are over, so I feel like right. We've been quite spoilt this week for Champions League. How are you?
Like you, I'm the same. I mean, what, 18 goals?
In four games.
Across the games? 18 goals in four games, really making up for the last round, I would say.
Ooh.
These are all... Come on, where's the lie?
The poor round of 16 taking strays. Like, guys, we finished ages ago.
They deserve to get cooked for round of 16. Let's be honest, look in our hearts.
Oh, Musa came out like Bernardo Silva. This
16,
minute 16 in,
wasn't, 16
just
wasn't
smashed
sweet.
One in the bottom corner. Wow.
Yeah, it's good. This is the last eight, and I'm like, now we're talking.
Yeah, I mean, we're going to talk about all four games.
We are.
Today. Well, first of all, we hope everyone's staying safe, staying well.
Mm.
Some admin. Ian and I jumped in the car and recorded straight after the final whistle of Bayern, Arsenal-Bayern, sorry, at the Emirates on Tuesday night. And so that's up now. If you want to go and listen to Wright's House from the car straight after the game, instant reaction. No Wright's House tomorrow. Because Ian and I are going to do a late one on Sunday.
Mm.
We're going to talk about Arsenal, Aston Villa. And we're going to talk about the Masters. Because, Musa,
it's the last day.
The Masters starts today.
Oh my God, amazing. I remember I was flying out of Boston in 97 on the last day of the Masters. So wow. I was standing. It was an incredible experience. I was doing a high school exchange. And everyone was standing there in awe. Like, it was the closest thing I've seen to a religious sporting experience in a long time.
Mm.
You had all these like middle class American dudes just standing there watching the airport TV as Tiger Woods just went round Augusta and 21 and just tamed it. Like did things, people were looking around. There was actually like an awed silence. People were looking around at each other going, we can't, how is he doing this here? Like, yeah.
Imagine winning your first major at Augusta and winning it by 12.
It was the closest thing, I think. I think the closest thing in football was maybe the Messi hat trick at the Bernabeu, the 3-3.
Yeah.
When Messi's, well, he's still 19, I think it was.
Yeah.
And everyone was like, okay.
All right. Shit.
Okay. He might actually be for real.
We're not winning anything for another 15 years. I don't know if we have any golf listeners or people who work in golf who listen, but if they do, like, hit us up. hello@stadio.football. We want to do some golf stuff. Want to go to some golf.
Yeah.
Just go and walk around.
I used to be a massive golf fan, actually, believe it or not.
Well, there you go.
Cricket, all of that. Early to mid-90s, I was obsessed with it, and then just kind of had to take out the rotation.
One had to go. So that's like one of those memes. Like
you just can't follow all the sport.
You have to let one go. I actually saw one of this earlier, which was just hot dog, hot dog, hot dog, your family. And it was just like, it's not even close. Oh, so funny. Anyway, yes, looking forward to 4 days in the Masters and a load of football. Some good football this weekend as well.
Are you going to go to Munich for their second leg?
No, I think I missed my I left my accreditation request quite late. So going to stay put and watch that from the comfort of my sofa.
Okay.
Or discomfort, as it's going to be. Yes. It's not exactly going to be chill, is it? No, anyway, let's talk about Champions League after this.
Let's do it.
And what do you want? Should we begin with Wednesday night's games, considering they were?
Yeah, I think we should.
Yeah,
I think we should.
Paris.
Yeah. Mm. Oh my God! Yes.
PSG 2.
Yeah.
Barcelona 3. Barcelona fans experienced the full Barcelona experience in this.
They did.
PSG started like you'd imagine PSG to start, and then actually I thought Barcelona took not control of the game, but responded really, really well. At 0-0, and actually, I thought we're playing the better football, but it never looked too far away from unraveling.
Yeah, that's the thing.
This is the great thing about watching Barcelona at the moment, though.
At each point, you know those chocolate creams with the gooey filling. There was a point in each of these games where you went through the hard, sensible exterior to the chaotic, the chaotic mass in the middle. And in each of these games, they had that point. And there was this really amazing 20-minute period, I thought, in the second half, where I thought, wow, this young team, even after Mbappe, is going to be so exciting. They're working together beautifully. You've got like Dembele, elder statesman, Barkley in the mix. It just looked like a really gorgeous setup. And this game is a difficult one to analyze because I wonder if there were like three distinct momentum changes.
Sorry, just shout out for elder statesman, 26-year-old Dembele.
Yeah, that's how young this team, yeah. He's been around forever, hasn't he? He's literally been around for an eternity. But I would say with this is, you know, they said games of two halves. This was a game of three thirds, actually.
It just felt like a really entertaining game in the sense that Barcelona really showed up. I think they showed up more than a lot of people maybe expected them to this season.
Mm.
But based on this season, let's say, or based on maybe what they've like heard. But this is a side who can still play football.
Yeah.
If anything, I think the problem probably came with, or the main thing that Barcelona, I think, suffered from was that they just missed a couple of really, really big chances.
Right, right.
There was one that João Cancelo had the opportunity to square, I think, at 2-0.
Yeah.
And kind of went for the option on his own. And actually a better pass there, or a better choice there, could have put Barcelona 2-0 ahead. And I think it's a, you know, obviously we'll talk about the way that it just switched straight away after half time. But a 2-0 buffer there for Barcelona, I think, triggers some of the older Champions League memories from PSG.
Mm.
Especially on a day where, and Xavi said this after the game, I thought what Barcelona will be really encouraged by is obviously you couldn't stop him doing anything, but I did think that Jules Koundé and Lamine Yamal ahead of him, they kind of managed that PSG left-hand side and Mbappe really
extremely
quite well, actually.
Extremely
better than
well.
I thought they would, I'm being honest.
Watching him coming inside was a sign.
Mm.
When he was coming inside like that, I thought, wow, he's not getting joy on the touchline, the byline. They just shut that thing down really well, really disciplined. And you mentioned this thing about almost going 2-0 up. That was a theme actually across these games.
Yeah,
there were definitely, like, you know, and Arsenal had that situation. Madrid had a chance to go 3-1 up. Like, it was very much people grasping moments. And then, you know, when PSG, but we'll talk to the goals. When PSG went ahead, I thought it was done actually at that point.
Yeah, I
thought if anyone was,
I thought, but I thought they were going to get a third, pull away, and I mean, the first goal was actually a good goal from Rafinha, who I thought was really, really good on the night.
Yes. Almost got a hat-trick in the end.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, looked very, very busy and like he was causing PSG a lot of problems.
Mm.
And Barcelona had a couple of chances before that, I think, right? It felt like momentum was shifting their way when they did eventually score.
Mm.
The two quick goals in succession after half-time for PSG to swing the game. Dembele, angry goal. Ferocious goal.
Oh,
actually.
My God, dude.
In fact, you know what? This was a round of angry goals.
Great take, actually. You know what's funny about that? I think, is Dembele, alongside Kevin De Bruyne, is he the angriest footballer with 2 feet?
Maybe.
Is he the angriest two-footed player, I think, in terms of the angle of his goals?
I mean, I potentially.
I think, yeah, Dembele, there was something so kind of like, you're going to get this work about that strike. And then
it's only his second PSG goal.
Which is bizarre because you look at the skill set. We said this for 1,000 years to Dembele. Dembele is just someone who, in terms of a gifted player, is like what, you know, whatever percentage, like top percentage of talent he is. He just has everything. And when he scores a goal like this, it's almost a reminder of like all the money that's paid for him and the future that's intended for him. I think he's now at his level, to be honest. I don't think, and that's not meant to be a dig, but my God, that finish was.
And then we got a celebration as well out of it, which I think was just.
I just.
Yes.
I just laughed because as he fell to the ground, I thought, oh my God, I used to be that skinny once.
Wow. I think this has been a good week a good week for players just not going overboard, but just celebrating in the appropriate manner against your former club.
Yeah, yeah, that's
just
right.
Just do it. And then Vitinha putting PSG 2-1 up.
Gorgeous goal. My goal of the game.
This was lovely, actually. Yeah. Felt like a proper goal. Sergio Roberto gets caught on his heels a little bit, tracking that run. And Pau Cabasi, who I thought was actually really good all game, just couldn't respond in time.
Mm.
Yeah, I thought him and Lamine Yamal were really good.
Maybe the best, yeah, alongside Rafinha, yeah. The best players for Barcelona.
But I actually think Barcelona's midfield handled stuff pretty well, though. Gundogan really grew into the game and I think took There were moments in the second half where he did this. He just did a couple of things where he would like wriggle through midfield, and you're just like, "Now that is that." Now, do you know what that is? Now that's experience. I realised I was going there. Then now that's experience.
No, I read it because they were up against like Fabian Ruiz. I thought was very, very good.
Yeah, very good.
He's as good as he looked as good in this game as it for a while. Look, I've no secret. I'm a huge Fabian Ruiz fan and would have liked him to be elsewhere. Actually,
Manchester United.
He would have been amazing. I think he would have been great at United, actually. That's just my own view. I think he would have been great. Just he could have put him as the only six. Anyway, who cares about what I've been.
Fabian Ruiz with Mount and Kobbie Mainoo.
Oh my God, that's hard. That's like a Mourinho midfield. But yeah, like I think Barcelona went toe-to-toe with PSG really well in midfield because there was a point, like I said, in that sort of middle third where they were just absolutely, they just took the tempo out of the game and stroking it around PSG and Barcelona couldn't really, that midsection, get near them.
Until.
And then they just get this second wind, third wind.
And then a Pedri comes along.
That pass by Pedri. So let's just.
Oh, God. I just want him to stay fit so badly. Like, you know how much of a Stadio favourite he is.
Absolutely.
Coming back off the bench, instant impact, clips it over the top to Rafinha, lovely finish, and just. A difference maker, like it's such a, that sounds like something that's going to be on a Brian's gun reel, but it's, he really is Pedri. He has this clear of like, what's it called? Like this kind of clarity of mind, you know, in really quite stressful situations, just to find something, it's almost like the game really slows down around him and pick out a pass like that. Beautiful pass. Great finish from Rafinha again, who then went off not long after. And then Barca get the third.
Again, like immediate intervention from a sub.
I know, first so touch.
Pedri comes on, changes the game. Christensen comes on and just makes Xavi look like a genius. Great header by Christensen. And then we're 3-2. And it's 3-2 up and it's deserved.
Yeah, this is the wild thing. Yeah,
But you're like, oh, PSG is so dominant. And then like, by the time they go 3-2 up, you're like, absolutely. Barcelona still ended in the ascendancy, I thought. They finished 3-2 up, but they didn't look. Yeah, they looked like the better team. They looked
PSG hit the post twice, didn't they? Afterwards, Dembele hit the post, and did Vitinha hit the post again? Oh no, there was a Barcola off the bar where it got deflected, and then was it a slight deflection? And Ter Stegen pushed it onto the bar. This was earlier.
God, it's so weird. It's so weird. There were a couple of like moments like this in almost each tie.
Yeah,
like deflections onto the bar or like shots off the post. Yeah in crucial stages. Yeah.
But yeah, I thought it was a pretty fair result, to be fair. I think, a draw would have been fair. A one goal victory by either side, I think, would have been, arguably fair as well. I thought Barcelona hung with PSG pretty well. And
I thought so, yeah.
Was that their first defeat in 19 home games, PSG?
That is interesting.
I think that's their first defeat in all comps in 27. So... it's not an easy place to go.
No, not at all.
Not an easy team to beat. A very good result for Barcelona.
Again,
just another thing, there have been these signs of just being Barcelona just being freed up a little bit since Xavi announced he was leaving. You know, the noise around it and the pressure and the kind of constant kind of like, oh, do the Barca thing. It's freed him up a little bit. And yeah, I don't know. I think they could be, if they nudge through PSG, they could be... what was your phrase? The scorpion in the sock?
Yeah, the scorpion in the sock. Yeah, because they're an awkward proposition. Kabasi's playing really well. They've got strong defence and they've got attacking tools. This is the thing about, they're packed with the devil. They are stacked in the forward aspects. And look, if the theme of this quarterfinals is clear, it's firepower and Barcelona absolutely have that.
Speaking of firepower, didn't really work. I was going to say go to the Bernabeu, but we need to go to the Metropolitano first.
We do. Don't worry. We'll get across Madrid in a moment. But let's start with Metropolitano.
I sent a thing in the Righty's House group just with a screenshot of the stats and the momentum from this game, and just said, "Guess the score." Carl said, "It's given championship vibes," and I was just like, "It's Atleti 2, Dortmund 1."
You know, the only thing that's not Atleti about this stat sheet and scoreline is there's no clean sheet.
Yeah.
But I remember, I think they did this in the group stages Champions League. It was like 32% possession, I think it was, when they beat them 2-0 at Atleti Dortmund. And it was just, it was weird because it wasn't consummate Atleti. You might look at this, and we said this, these aren't this isn't the Dortmund a few years ago, and it's not the Atletico Madrid. It's a lot more nervy. The defence isn't as robust. The football is actually a little more free in attack, it's funnily enough. Yes, it's better. Yeah, it's a bit more, fun to entertaining.
Watch. I mean, it's more entertaining to watch on a more frequent basis.
Can I say, actually, what am I entertaining? So, game ends 2-1. Atleti with the opener from Rodrigo de Paul within 5 minutes after 4 minutes.
Yeah, big mistake from Mattsson trying to pass that ball around the corner, dropping into midfield, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And then, like, de Paul ends up with a lovely slotted finish. And then jogs away and is, like, doing that celebration, like, you know, like, the chattering celebration, as in, like, obviously someone in the press has had a lot to say about him. But that's also kind of weird. I always, whenever I see those things, I'm like, oh, what's behind that? Like, who is, who's been chirping at De Paul? And, like, why do you care?
I mean, I imagine quite a lot of people have been chirping at De
Paul. That's fair, that's fair. And then Lino putting him 2-0 up.
Mm.
It's a lovely finish. Griezmann lofted pass. Griezmann again, just the busiest, you know, arguably the world's busiest outfield player since N'Golo Kanté.
Wow. Got,
yeah. I would say he's so busy. Absolutely. He floats a pass from the inside right over to Lino, takes it down and slots it again. Lovely finish. And then, like, let it at that point, looking fairly assured, I think.
Yeah, but I thought it was interesting, though, that after that, it felt like Dortmund kind of took control of the ball because Atleti didn't really need to do anything. So they were just not digging in, but they were just kind of like, all right, you do your thing. And they just like kept stinging Dortmund on the counterattack. They had a couple of other chances that they probably should have scored. And Dortmund were just a little bit like, I mean, I would say it's uncharacteristic, but it wasn't. It's a few errors that we've seen this season, but from maybe uncharacteristic or like unfamiliar sources. I thought Mats Hummels had a couple of weird ones. There was a moment, there was a mix-up with him and Schlotterbeck that that Atleti got in for as well. And there were just a few, I don't know why, there were just a few unforced errors from Dortmund where they didn't need to do. And it wasn't like Atleti were putting loads of pressure on them in those moments and stuff. And I think that would be the thing for Edin Terzic to take back for the second leg is that I actually think Dortmund were okay. And they proved that once they got the goal back, Sebastian Haller with a great goal.
Yeah.
Hit the bar twice after that.
The deflection first, Piliquetta.
As the Germans would say, Beimal Aluminium.
Yes.
Bino Gittins with the first. And then Julian Brandt hit the kind of post bar angle.
Should have scored. Should have scored.
Yeah. And then if that's 2-2, wow.
Mm.
But again, ifs.
I think looking back, there was one thing that was interesting in this game. Like, you saw some of the loose Dortmund passes, and I think that was the, when you're looking up at a wall of Atleti defenders just sitting deep, it leads to, it's not that Atleti are putting pressure on the ball, it's that you're looking up going, how the hell do we get there? And you kind of force the touch, you force the pass because you're thinking, I can't see gaps. So we saw a couple of those. We actually saw a bit of that in the other Madrid game, actually, Madrid City. Oh, yeah, we saw Madrid City where we saw a couple of loose passes, which we'll get to in a sec. But yeah, like Atleti winning 2-1 with that stat line, but also not exerting the match control we associate with Atleti. And an emblem of this game has to be Simeone and Sebastian Kehl going nose to nose. You shared it in the group.
I loved this.
Wild. Each team should nominate from their own coaching staff a snarl off. Who from your coach team will snarl at the opposition? So actually for Madrid, I think it's clearly Simeone. And then Kehl, I think you would nominate. Well, we've seen that now. He's obviously proven himself. But I think that's interesting. Like, who would you nominate from Arsenal's coaching staff to snarl at the opposition?
Just Arteta. Just let Arteta go. He wants to do it anyway. Barcelona, Gavi's just like, let me at him!
Let me at him!
Proper scrappy-doo vibes. Let me at him.
Absolutely.
Although, to be fair, I think, like, Simeone is really, really good at giving it. And I think when he saw Sebastian Kehl in the distance, I think he was just like, this fucking guy. And then he gets closer and he's like, shit, I forgot that Sebastian Kehl's actually quite a big dude.
Yes.
And you could see as he was getting closer, Simeone was a bit like, oh, shit.
Yikes.
All right, so 2-1 going back to Dortmund. It's going to be loud there at the Westfalen.
Mm.
Champions League nights at the Westfalen, they've done quite well this season. I think they'll go through.
Interesting. I'm not convinced.
I mean, I'm not convinced, but I think they will go through.
It's actually my favourites for this. Ooh. Still. Yeah. Don't know why, they just are.
I mean, so there. Yeah. I mean, to be honest, also, Griezmann could score within 30 seconds and it could be done. So this that's, I think exactly. They're the only two outcomes, like a brilliant Dortmund victory or Atleti lock it off after a minute.
Exactly.
That's literally the only two things that could happen. All right, let's take a quick break and then we'll do Tuesday's games.
Let's do it. So, Real Madrid 3, Manchester City 3.
Goals.
This was an unbelievable game.
Do you know what the only thing this game was missing?
A red card.
As many red cards as there were goals.
You know, this game was interesting because Danny Carvajal was not chaotic in the first half. That's when I knew something was different. And, you know, this game, there's a few themes that developed. The first was, obviously, Bernardo Silva's free kick was super smart in at the near post and caught them short. And I feel like that was kind of a little bit of a theme for Madrid, struggling to get on the pace throughout. Like City having most of the ball and the match control because Rodri's passing was sublime. With the exception of one pass that was sliced clear in the middle of the second half, I thought, this is so funny. I thought to myself, this game is so chaotic that even Rodri's doing this. Yeah.
It was really fun. Like, everyone had their moments. But actually, no one did a huge amount other than that outside of those moments.
Yes.
Do you know what I mean?
Yes,
like, even Foden. Yeah, Foden said something like, I didn't really do much in the first half. And then he just rocks up in the second and scores an unbelievable goal.
The only one who was continually busy in an attacking sense was, I think, Vinicius, actually.
Yeah, I mean, he always is.
Vinicius is the one guy that was bringing it consistently. I thought Bellingham, he seemed in a kind of duel with, there's a frustration with the referee, and also he was monitored pretty well by Stones.
Yeah.
I thought Stones, with the exception of one beautiful move that he puts on Stones and Bernardo Silva in the second half where he drags it across goal, it could have been 3-1, should have been 3-1. Mm. With the exception of that, I think Stones was pretty tight to him and pretty impressive. And it came clear from the early seconds that this ref wasn't going to give Bellingham a lot of things. But not Bellingham in particular, but he wasn't going to let the kind of foul be penalised that Bellingham would like to be penalised.
There are a few of these this week, though, because there was one in the PSG game where I think Rafinha gets absolutely scythed down early on, and it's like a booking. I think it might have even been Fabian Ruiz. It's a booking and a foul, and Anthony Taylor just lets him play on. And I'm like, what the?
Anthony Taylor's been like that in a couple of games recently, actually, just let the game flow. And I get it. I get the mentality. And I think overall it's a benefit. It's a little frustrating. Mm. You know what it is? Actually, no, it only works as a strategy when both teams have come to play football.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, that's fair. Do we need to give more love to Bernardo Silva's free kick? Because it was very much just like, it caught them on the
hop. Off guard. You know, and it's funny because you look at them lining up from that distance and I remember thinking, you don't have that much power in your shot. Like, I've seen Bernardo Silva shoot from that distance. I'm like, you don't have an absolute pinger from there, a heater from there.
Hey, listen, the Bernabeu roof was closed and all Bernardo could hear was Moussa Kwanga's voice echoing around it, being like, you don't have the power from the shot. You know, like in those old 80s movies, there's just pictures of Moussa coming up on each shoulder from Bernardo being like, you don't have the power. He was just like, I'll show you.
Yeah, there was, it was a really clever free kick and it was embarrassing for Madrid, wasn't it?
Yeah. I mean, that early on as well.
Yeah, right.
And also that Chiellini gets the booking, he's going to miss the second leg, which...
Yeah, oh my God. Yeah.
Although, to be fair, I think by considering how many of them were on a yellow card for that second leg, the fact that only Chiellini was the one that is going to miss it is actually kind of all right, I think.
The only bad thing is that he's a stand-in centre-back.
Yeah.
So where are they going to draw in from there? Yeah.
Yeah, but Militao's back and they have Nacho back as well. So I wonder whether one of those will play instead.
So maybe the suspension hasn't come at the worst time.
No, I think not for, I mean, yeah. I mean, obviously Tchouaméni is going to be a miss at any point, but the fact that he's playing centre-back isn't really his strongest position.
No, of course.
But yeah, then less than 10 minutes later, it went down as a Diaz own goal.
Yeah, it was. The deflection was pretty big, that's fair.
And then a couple of minutes later, Rodrigo, goal machine Rodrigo. I've always thought that Rodrigo was a volume goal scorer. And do you know what was really cool about this, actually? The in real time, I thought this goal was so good.
I thought it was like a Robbie Fowler finish.
Like, just
I thought it was absolutely
slowed
genius.
Down, did a little step over, and then just poked it through the legs of the keeper, oh, yeah. and they're all solid. Elegant. But actually, it was like a deflection, then through the legs.
Yeah, like, oh, okay. But it was pretty good that he hung tough with Akanji, who is a unit.
I mean, Rodrigo's turning into a little bit of a composure machine.
Yeah, he is. Yeah. It's a pretty bold raid that he made there. So 2-1 to Madrid, and then you're like, we have league, as they would say. We have Champions League.
It's the Vinicius chance, isn't it, that you're going to talk about for 3-1?
Yeah, the Vinicius chance for 3-1. I think that's the one. Bellingham dragging it wide is one, but the Vinicius one that goes like marginally over, I think. Because the problem is we know how good City are at home. Yeah. And there is this kind of feeling that they will just... I'm not going to lie, I have that feeling. Rodri and Stones there, dictating midfield. And you don't have the Bernabeu behind you. Good luck. Good luck with that. This is why I feel City are going to go through, actually.
Yeah, I think so. But everyone always thought City would go through against Real Madrid.
That's true, but we had this last year, didn't we, with the 1-0. We had this last year when City went 1-0 up. And they didn't hold on to it. They made a substitution a bit late. Was it Camavinga they brought in late or something? And then De Bruyne gets that scorcher from distance. Yeah. And we were saying, if City go to full time, if we go to the Etihad at one, if Madrid go to the Etihad at 1-0, it's completely different.
Yeah.
So yeah.
Yeah. Foden. Talk Phil Foden.
Dude, this. Like this strike from distance. You know that we talked about this before when Messi started thrashing it hard from a distance. Like Foden wasn't always thrashing the ball like this. And now you see that. This man is absolutely... You saw Pep's reaction. Pep going forehead to forehead with him going, you're the guy. Like, this game is yours. Foden is 23 years old.
Wild.
And he's scoring huge, huge goals in games like this. And it was so clean, the strike.
It was like, so good, man. But the thing that was amazing, I thought, was that Guardiola scores that one 5 minutes later. Did you see Foden's reaction?
No.
Foden kind of like jogs a bit and then stops and puts his hands on his head as if to be like, wow, holy shit, what a goal.
Oh, can I be honest? I feel a bit sorry for Kroos here because Guardiola's touch to set him up is not that good.
No.
So, poor Kroos. The ball's kind of squirming away from him. So basically Guardiola's like, this is on my wrong foot.
Yeah.
Let me absolutely clatter it. It's like a last chance saloon. He rips it. It's almost like bad first touch, incredible second. The first touch isn't great, so it squirts away from Kroos. Mm. And then poor Kroos gets subbed immediately afterwards. And he was good, actually, I thought.
I think he's been playing quite well, actually.
Yeah, he's been brilliant. He's been brilliant. There was that moment in the second half, when Kroos is like pressing deep, chasing. And I'm like, I haven't seen Toni Kroos press that deep in the opposition half for a while, like really, really pressing in the build up. And I was like, I love this.
I was at the last game he did that. I was at the Emirates when he was playing for Bayern in about 2014. A long time ago.
That's not meant to shade. So then Modric comes in and Modric immediately just
starts running the game.
Dude, it's incredible.
It's wild, isn't it?
Up in the right back slot, calling for all the time, dropped into the centre back slot. Every decision is, I told you this, like whenever Modric crosses the halfway line, then you can start playing horror music, like music from horror films, like the violins start playing. See, I think he puts in a good corner before he's involved in the goal, but then he does this really nice break down the centre of the pitch into the inside left channel and then plays it into Vinicius. Vinicius looks up and just clips this gorgeous.
You know what, there's like, pass. I think it's the second or third touch that Modric has when he's into the Man City half, and it's like we said before, something just goes off. You're like, City are in trouble here. I don't know why, but they're in trouble.
Yeah. Like he's seen something. Yeah.
And great ball from Vinicius. And then what a finish from Valverde.
Right.
Our boy Fede.
Who was excellent throughout, I thought.
I mean, yeah.
Gorgeous goal.
Yeah. 3-3. And Real Madrid could have had another, I think, right? Did I have another chance towards the end? I mean, to be honest, I think all of these games had so many chances towards the end that I imagine that all of them had chances towards the end. But 3-3 to go back to the Etihad. Yeah, I'd still fancy City, but I'm hyped for all of these second legs. This is the great thing about all of these ties is that none of them are over whatsoever. They're all really, really finely balanced. What, two single goal advantages, two draws.
And also no away goals, so just everything's in the mix. Love it.
All right, final game of the round. Arsenal 2, Bayern 2.
Mm.
obviously, Ian and I talked about this immediately after the game. So let's get Moussa Okwonga's thoughts first.
Arsenal were playing the name on the fixture list and not the actual team.
I like
so frustrating. So frustrating because Bayern had dropped Upamecano and Kim Tuchel-Had. So you have two centre-backs who were not quick, De Ligt and Dier. You know, very good defenders, but not quick. So the way that Arsenal start this game, they're going with real speed. And then the passing out from the back was heralded. You could see there was trouble. Raya played a really bad pass before Bayern's opener, and I knew that there was trouble.
I said before the game, was talking to a few people about this, and I said, if Arsenal play purely on ability and how good these teams are, Arsenal should comfortably win this game.
Mm.
If nerves play a factor, that's the thing that will undo Arsenal.
Yes.
And it was, actually. And it was. I think it was purely nerves that created those opportunities that Bayern had. Because if you think about it, apart from the one that hit the post, they had a penalty that was gifted to them really because of a goal that was gifted to them. Two massive errors from Arsenal. That first goal, I said on Wright's House, that first goal is initially Raya coming out too far. But as soon as Gabriel sees him there, he needs to just put that out of play.
Absolutely, yeah.
To try and play a pass, like a kind of reverse pass infield up the channel, it's not the one. And I think that that nervousness was at play. And then the penalty was, again, as soon as Kivior gets turned on the halfway line, I kind of watched it again. I think he actually gets turned just inside Arsenal's half. Just bring him down.
Yeah, I agree.
Those are the two main moments where Arsenal, I feel like, I said this on Wright's House, but just showed a little bit of naivety. Mm. And I think that this is something that we talked about. Arsenal haven't got many Champions League reps. You know, Bayern at home in the Champions League quarterfinal is a different thing. No matter what the season that Bayern have had, you saw that they still had really, really good, they've got a really good team. And also how much they can hurt you running in behind. That's why when Xabi Alonso's Leverkusen played him in the second game, they just let Bayern have the ball and made sure that they didn't give them space to run in behind. And actually, it was something that I said in the initial thing on Wright's House that I was a little bit, I wonder whether Arsenal could have sat off buying a little bit.
Mm.
But other than that, stepping back from it now and it being, you know, this is Thursday, Tuesday night, the game was, I feel quietly confident about that second leg because I think that Arsenal were superior to Bayern.
Yes.
And what Arsenal have been quite good at this season is learning pretty quickly when they've made those errors.
And they're more resilient than they were before, for sure.
And I think that they've been quite businesslike away from home.
Mm.
And the one thing that I thought, you know, there was, it was quite emotional in there. It was so loud.
Wow.
Well, obviously, the extra Arsenal fans in there because the Bayern fans weren't allowed to travel. It was so loud.
Mm.
But I think the problem was then that when Bayern scored those two goals, the atmosphere shifted very, very quickly. But yeah, then let's move on to maybe like the subs. Trossard coming on.
Love that. I mean, Zinchenko came on. I wasn't convinced by that sub. I can't lie, but I think...
Just jumping in there, I think the only reason it wasn't Tomiyasu was a fitness thing.
Actually, the change. So I saw the change and I thought, I respected it because I thought it was bold. I didn't realize it was fitness related, but I thought about bringing Zinchenko on, a bit more playmaking from deep. The stuff he tried mostly didn't work that well, but it did provide some drive and some impetus. And I think you need to signal some intent as they did with the sub. But what Trossard gave us, I mean, that goal, if they're going to take any Ellie solace from this, the second goal, the way they constructed that, the way they just ran at Bayern and absolutely cooked them, that's the formula.
Yeah, and I wonder whether that's maybe something to bear in mind for the second leg, whether maybe Martinelli sits for the first bit and Jesus plays wide. Mm.
Yeah.
And then bring Martinelli on if Bayern are chasing the game when there's a little bit more space in behind to hurt them.
Mm.
Because I think that what the Zinchenko sub did do quite well was that it gave Arsenal a little bit more help in midfield. I think Arsenal struggled in midfield.
Yes.
Mm. I think Goretzka and Conny Lima were really good.
Goretzka was excellent.
Goretzka was very, excellent. Very good, actually.
That's as good as he's been for a while. Yeah.
Yeah, hopefully he enjoyed playing at the Emirates and wouldn't mind. Well, like I said,
he's welcome to play them more regularly.
You know, I really hope that Leon Goretzka left being like, wow, What a stadium. What an atmosphere. I think I'd look really good in this kit.
This could be us, but you're playing.
No, he's an Adidas guy as well, man. So, oh, wow. You know, I'm just saying. Should we do it? The two penalty shouts.
Yes.
So there were two huge penalty shouts in this game. Well, actually, I think there was one huge penalty shout, and I think there was one that, and the reason I say that the other one wasn't huge was that in real time, literally no one kind of picked up that it was a thing.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, it's weird.
And
so
actually,
weird.
After the game, no one really picked up it that it was a thing until they saw a very kind of like isolated replay of it. And I'm interested to see what you think about it, because a lot of people have said like, oh, this is absolutely a penalty. And a lot of people have said, this is absolutely not a penalty.
No, I'm with you on the initial.
So we're talking about the Gabriel handball. Right?
Yeah, yeah.
Right.
He catches it. No, I don't think it was, because I think, I think if VAR caught it, no, let me be fence sitting for once. If VAR caught it, it's a penalty.
See, I'm still not so sure, because how many times, for example, do we hear a whistle go when someone's taken a free kick and the player actually like then kicks the ball to another player who puts it down and takes a free kick properly?
Yeah.
We see it quite a lot, actually.
Yeah.
It's never really picked up on.
No, it's not. It's funny that Tuchel latched onto that, though.
Well,
I think because it would have been 3-1. Yeah. I mean, it's understandable why he went for it. So yeah, let's say for the sake of fence sitting, if it got reviewed, I can understand why it'd been given, but it would have been extremely petty. Extremely petty.
I think it's a strange one. Like, I think because it's such a weird situation, I think I don't really, we'll put it this way. So with situations like that, I kind of, you know, I'm like, right, if that had happened, if Bayern had done that and I hadn't picked up on it in real time, and then after the game, I'm like, oh my God. I would have just been like, whatever. If Arsenal had been awarded a penalty for that, I would have been a bit like, why has this happened? Am I going to have to reason with this? But I would have felt very uneasy if Arsenal had been given a penalty for that as an Arsenal fan.
Yeah, that's fair enough. That's fair enough. And you're quite fair about that stuff. Okay, so.
Thanks very much.
Let's say no penalty in that case, but the really big penalty shout is the Saka one.
It's one of those. Like, I'm kind of fine with both of these decisions, actually.
Yeah.
The Saka one, in real time, I thought it was a penalty. On the replay, I didn't think it was a penalty. But the more that I've seen the replay and the more that I've kind of listened to some other people's interpretations of it, I'm kind of like the Larry David gif. So in that case, I'm kind of fine with it not being a penalty.
Yes, because the problem with this was, the penalty is a bit of a morality tale, because I think Saka underestimates how quick he is to the ball. So I think Saka is thinking when he's sprinting, high speed, draw contact, all good. But he gets there much quicker than Neuer. Right, he nudges it round him. I think that he can actually nudge it round him and slot it between those three defenders. I think it was on. I think if he commits
the only reason I disagree with that is because he is traveling at such a speed. Right, I don't think he can get round Neuer like that. I just don't think he can. But this is what I said on Wright's house in the car. I said, I think the thing is that because he is traveling at such speed and he is going to struggle to change direction that sharply. I don't think he needs to look for the contact. I think the contact happens anyway.
Because he does. Yeah, he does draw it. He does draw the contact. But
his right leg out, which accentuates the contact.
He oversold it.
He knows that he's put his right leg out, and he knows that there's contact. It's so quick that he hasn't clocked that Saka's gone looking for it as well.
That's a great shot.
But I feel like this is one of those again. If it's awarded on the field, I don't think it gets overturned.
No.
Because it isn't awarded, it's not going to get overturned because of Saka looking for it. So
I think that's it. I think the theme with this was, we're not giving a decision of that magnitude to a situation like that. And I think Saka oversold it, if I'm honest.
Yeah,
I just think 100%. You know, and that was it. And these things are all about, you know, it's the challenge that Bellingham had with some of the fouls that he was getting. I think some of those were fouls, actually, on Bellingham. I really think they were. But I think he was too demonstrative.
He didn't need to look for the contact. It was going to happen.
And that's right. Yeah.
Let the contact come to you.
Exactly. Listen, that's.
I get why some people will be, what the hell are you talking about? This was definitely a penalty, or that was definitely, not a penalty. But Ian and I initially afterwards were like, we didn't think this was the penalty. And the Tuchel thing about the handball was so, like, that handball was so off the radar that we only literally saw a tweet about it midway through recording. Yeah. So. that kind of goes to show, I think, how both, you can kind of feel both.
Yeah, I think, yeah.
But I mean, the overall performance from Arsenal, not their best.
No.
One of the best, I wouldn't say the best, but I think you probably saw a top five performance from Bayern this season.
Yeah.
And I think that's the thing that Arsenal got to take to Munich, is that the lack of mistakes this season has been such a strength from Arsenal.
Mm.
Had two big mistakes in this game that cost them two goals. They were the only two shots that Bayern had on target. They had that one with Kingsley Coman off the post that went through Raya's legs near the end. But I think other than that, it was giving Bayern the space in behind and the errors. And I think that that's just something that they'll have to fix in Munich. And if they do fix it in Munich, they have the talent there.
They should go through.
They should, actually.
Yeah. Yeah, they should.
That sounds, it's balanced, but they should go through. They are,
and one thing Arsenal need to do,
a better football team than Bayern.
And one thing Arsenal need to do, I want to just say this, they are ahead of their development, I think, in terms of their growth as a team. I would just say, if you look at teams like Chelsea won the Champions League before they were ready. And I think that Arsenal need to take the same energy. Stop waiting for the project to have its culmination. Stop looking at it as in, oh, we'll work this out next year. No, get it this year, because the variables will keep changing. Next year, Real Madrid might have Mbappe, and that is a problem. That is a problem.
Do you know what's interesting, actually, though? Watching the Real Madrid-Man City game, I was just like, how happy would Haaland be in this team?
Yeah, you're right, you know. You're right.
Because it's chaotic enough that he's going to get way more of the ball.
Yes, whereas City, it's like he's... like, it's weird, Harry Kane, I was talking to a friend about this before, like Harry Kane being a better natural fit.
Mm.
Harry Kane would score fewer goals for City because who's scoring more than Haaland? But in terms of a fit, in terms of an integration, yeah, City style of
play. That was the thing that torched Arsenal all game, actually. The only thing, really, was Harry Kane dropping deep into that kind of pocket, getting the ball and pinging it out to Sané.
Such a good passer.
And he's done that a lot this season for Bayern, hasn't he? We've talked about this a lot, how he's linked with Sané really well, especially in the early stages of the season.
I think he got away with an elbow, you know.
Yeah, me too. I said that.
I think he got away with that. I really do. As they call it in the legal profession, we call it sharp practice.
But all to play for in Munich.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah.
I don't think necessarily that any decision really cost anyone. Really, you know.
Mm. The slight frustration for Arsenal is that they do insist on doing things the hard way. In the last couple of ties, that's a slight frustration. Look at Porto. They could have managed that tie more comfortably, I think. Margins.
I don't know. I think this is just where you have to, like, it's a different competition and you have to kind of respect the opposition's ability to actually make things more difficult for you.
That's what I'm saying. They're excellent. What I was saying really is that the Champions League, it's incredible what you get punished for. There's so much stuff. You're like, oh my God, we don't get away with this here. No, you don't.
No.
Like,
yeah. I mean,
because in the Champions League, a Leroy Sané, who hasn't scored for ages now, can carry the ball for 70 yards, no problem, for like an hour. He can do that. Like, he can beat 2-3 men on a dribble. That's the different caliber. And at any time, this is what I love about the Champions League, you literally come in 20% undercooked and you do get cooked. I love it.
Yep. I reckon that'll do us for today.
All good, yeah. Yeah. Got to get this
podcast out and then sit down and watch Europe's Premier Club competition tonight. Can we let me just list these ties? Milan, Roma.
Oh goodness, the food.
Leverkusen, West Ham.
The fashion, yeah. Oh.
Benfica, Marseille. Liverpool, Atalanta.
I mean,
and you got perfection. The Conference League as well, man. The Conference League's looking good.
Love it, love it.
So very hyped for that. And then also, yeah, like I said, Masters. God, what a feast of sport. A
joyful weekend of sport, yes.
All right, everyone. We hope everyone's staying safe, staying well. And don't forget to check Right Sounds from Tuesday if you haven't. Right, Ian and I will be back on Sunday late, recording. And don't forget to check the Stadio Outros playlist on Spotify. Speaking of which, we're playing out on the alternative version of So Far by Faust. And And we're going to leave you with that. Anything you would like to add, Musa or Congo?
Nothing further.
All right, everyone, much love. Have a lovely weekend. And you and I will be back on Monday.
We will indeed. See you then.